Okay. Well, hello there. My name is Dr. Susan Lindner, and welcome to Mental Health 360. I want to thank you for tuning into our show and to let you know that this is a program that's designed to address your mental health needs and your concerns, and really to answer any questions or provide resources that you may need to optimize your own mental health. So some of you may know me from a previous show with CBS New Sky Radio called Keeping Life Real with Dr. Susan. So yes, I am one and the same. You can find me on my website, which is www.keepinglifereal.com. And if you are interested in finding out a little bit about my book, which is coming out November 14th, 2021, the name of the book is called Reset Your Soul, and you can find that at www.resetyoursoul.nyc, New York City. So tonight we're going to actually speak about what is mental health. We're going to start this program and this series, Mental Health 360, by starting with the basics, and then we will flower out to address the needs and questions and concerns that are coming in from the audience. I guess this is a good time to mention that if you would like to call in, the call-in number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And you can call in with any questions or concerns or thoughts. We're very fluid and very open-minded here. This is a collective experience. So yes, I will guide and provide resources from a psychological perspective, but, I do believe in, I have a very open mind and I'm also learning as you learn. So we'll grow together. Tonight our topic is what is mental health? And what is mental health therapy? And I am very, very privileged, and I want to welcome some real people who have some real stories and real thoughts and ideas about tonight's topic. So I'd like to welcome Stephanie. Are you on the line, Steph? Stephanie? Okay, I don't hear her. Okay, good. And we have Michaela.
Hi.
Okay, Michaela, thanks for joining us. And Gladys.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, Michaela, it's great that you joined us. And what about Gladys? Gladys, are you on the line?
Gladys is now on the line.
Yeah, hi.
Gladys is now on the line.
Okay, good. And okay, great. I didn't know that. So I have a great producer and behind the scenes who I guess this is a good time to just send a shout out to Don and Doug, who have been really absolutely incredible in helping me get on board here with BBS Radio. And anyone who's interested in hosting their own show, I would absolutely encourage you to call them because they are 100% the real deal. Okay, so ladies, we are tonight going to address what is mental health. And I thought it might be great for the listeners to hear from real people who have their own real stories and their own concerns and their own experiences about how do you define mental health. So maybe, Michaela, you could start for us and tell us how you define mental health.
So in my opinion, I feel like mental health is just basically someone's well-being, whether it's good or bad. Some people struggle a lot more with anxiety or depression or how well they're doing, whereas others are a lot better in a way at maintaining it. But I think it's just all about like how you're feeling, whether it's like today or like a week or sometimes even longer, it could be months. But it's just you realizing, like, oh, I'm doing good or I'm not doing so well. And it's just you're able to pick up on that and understand, like, how your mind is doing.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting point. And also separating how your mind is feeling, or actually how your body is feeling versus what your mind is thinking.
100%.
Right? Because sometimes the mind may be thinking one thing and the body is feeling something else. So when we are out of alignment, that misalignment, that's our cue, usually, that something's not working in our day or just in our life, right? That's what we want to pay attention to. What about you, Gladys? How would you define mental health?
Without muting myself, how do I define mental health? Well, to me, mental health is to have a clean mind, that we will be able to actually control how we feel mentally, because that affects every aspect of our life and also the rest of our body. And of course, that is one of the most important things to take care of. Without mental health, the rest will fall apart. So,
You know, you bring. I thank you for sharing that. You know, you said something that's interesting, to control how you feel, and I have to ask you: do you think that we have the capacity to control how we feel, or is it that we have the capacity to control how we react and what we react to?
I think the only control that we have is how we react and how we take the bad, the good, and the not so good moments in our life and make it work for us. It's then and don't let them take the best of us.
Yeah, I think that the goal for mental health awareness really is understanding what is mental health, understanding what are our emotions, and then how do we actually direct them, and how do we reframe and perhaps like repackage our perceptions so we can have better outcomes, we can have a more stable mood, an improved affect, and an overall sense of feeling content. I'm not saying happy, but content and peace, which I think is really the goal for optimal mental health, is to have real nice pace and a nice rhythm to one's life. Stephanie, are you on the phone?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. So, Steph, just out of curiosity, how do you define mental health? How would you define it?
Well, when I think of mental health, how I would define it, well, if we define physical health, we think about working out, eating healthy. So mental health is really taking care of yourself intellectually and also emotionally. And as you were talking about your feelings and controlling your reactions, I do think it's a form of self-care, mental health, and it helps you kind of regain control and awareness within yourself.
You know, that's a really, really good point, and I'm so glad that you brought it up. For some of you who do not know about my training, I am a clinical psychologist, but I am also trained in Gestalt psychoanalysis and in QHHT, which is quantum healing hypnosis technique. And the truth of the matter is that my work started by focusing in on the body and then letting the body guide me into understanding what my own feelings were and what my own issues and problems were. So many of times, when we say, let's go work out, go for a run, do something that's physical, I think that's really, it's great advice. And I know that it's doctor's orders in many cases, because when we relieve our stress and our body's feeling better, our mind feels better because our mind is a body part, right?
Yeah.
So knowing that, you know, we all have struggled, especially since COVID, I don't think there's anybody that has not shared with me, and myself included, days where you feel either a little overwhelmed or you feel flat or you feel like just like a little lost, can't find your footing. Since this pandemic, hopefully we're coming out of it and starting off on in a different way. Everyone's saying to me, there is no going back, right? There's no going back. And in some ways that may be really good. And in other ways, I'm sure that's, you know, challenging and difficult because many people find change uncomfortable. And I was wondering if anyone had any comments about that in terms of change.
Change a lot of times is a very uncomfortable feeling because it's taken us out of our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over time, we kind of spend time making our nests and we know what to expect. We have a routine. So being in a routine makes us feel safe, but there could be an opportunity that we can see as, you know, there's a lot of positive things or advantages in taking this opportunity, but it would change things. So do you accept the change or do you just kind of keep comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. It's a risk.
It's a risk, right? It's a, and hopefully it's a calculated risk.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you agree with that, Gladys?
I will say that accepting changes in whatever comes to into our lives is, as we said before, is how we deal with that change, how we can make that change work for us.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it worked better if I look at it that way. What this change can bring to me that I can benefit from. Not so much about the negative part of the change. And what this pandemic has teach me is to have a little more sympathy for the loss of life. In the last of 2 weeks, I lost coworkers, members of my union, and they pretty much went 4 people in the lapse of 2 weeks, and I was like, wow, I never seen it that way, because I never experienced the loss of life so close to each other. How I look at it, I try to bring that into the good side, and like once again, try to make it work for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, Michaela, before we move over to you, I just want to comment on that. You know, I actually right now I have the privilege of doing assessments for veterans who have been through Iraq. Wars in Afghanistan, Kuwait, and then some of the older vets, really, actually some Vietnam vets, and believe it or not, some Korean War vets as well. And the sense of loss and grief, although Gladys, I give you a lot of credit for saying that you're acknowledging actually two sides of one coin. One side is that it's overwhelming and it's daunting to process the amount of grief and loss that you have yourself seen over the last 2 weeks. This is your story specifically in terms of COVID and what happened in this pandemic. And yet, I'm speaking to vets who are sometimes 12 years out, 21 years out, and I have vets that are describing to me symptoms that you would think, now I'm the clinical psychologist, but you would think that they are speaking to, they want to speak to a medical doctor because they're describing symptoms that are psychological and they are psychologically manifesting. But how are they manifesting? Through their physical symptoms. So for example, the vets are telling me, and I don't know, Gladys, if you have been experiencing this or any of our listeners who may be experiencing this, but when I say that, listen to your body, the vets are telling me that they can't sleep, they have insomnia, they're restless, they're agitated, they're frustrated, they have poor frustration tolerance, they get very easily annoyed with their loved ones. And then they are also sharing with me that how are they coping? And a lot of them, this is going to be a part of our program as we move forward. We will address in each segment different strategies for coping and interventions and also how to really work with obstacles and roadblocks, right? So roadblocks could be like what I'm seeing when I do assessments or when real patients are coming into the room and they're telling me that they're spending too much money and they're in credit card debt or, they're just overeating, overdrinking. They report lethargy and fatigue. So when you speak of grief and loss, I think it has, it's two sides of the same coin. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell me what you're hearing to make sure that I said it clearly?
Well, I didn't see it that way. I didn't make the connection. I can tell that I was seeing the two sides of it. I just was trying to make it, once again, make it work for me. But now that you mentioned some of the not sleeping well and maybe, and also about eating what is not, well, what I'm supposed to be eating, that was maybe part of it as well. I'm a little bit a bit confused, to be honest, but I didn't see it that way. But this pandemic is, I'm glad we're getting almost rid of this disease, or hopefully control this virus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Michaela, what about you in terms of change?
I definitely think that change can be overwhelming because, like Stephanie said before, like we're so used to being in our comfort zones. But I personally just believe that in certain scenarios, it's good to come out of your comfort zone because you get so used to one thing, but it's not to say that, like, it's going to be like that for the rest of your life, for instance, like, whether it's with a person or, like, a job or whatever. Like, I know I'm a very big person on, like, anxiety. Like, I get very bad anxiety, so, like, I notice small changes and like tones of people's voices and stuff. And it's like, it's definitely an overwhelming and like scary type of feeling. And it's hard to deal with, but I do believe that like certain things do happen for a reason. I don't think that this pandemic has anything really to do with that in a sense. Like, I don't think there's a reason that just happened or that this was like a good change for all of us to experience. But I do think a lot of people have changed over the course of the pandemic. A lot of people became more quiet, or like, I know it did mess some people up mental wise and it left some people depressed, or a lot of people lost friends. And I know that personally, or like family members, even due to COVID or anything else. And it's definitely an overwhelming feeling and it's hard to deal with. And we're not used to it, or sometimes we don't want to get used to it, but I definitely believe that in certain events or scenarios, it's needed because you can't just get used to one thing.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You can't get used to one thing. You know, it's interesting because in my book, Reset Your Soul, which is coming out in November, I talk about a 5-step action plan. And in that...
Thank you.
And in that, she... I'm sorry, I just saw Stephanie just called back in. And in the book, we talk about the 5 steps as being the 5 A's. So one is acknowledgement, acknowledging like what's going on, like what is going on, what you're experiencing, what you're feeling, what you think, what you feel. It just acknowledge it. And when you acknowledge something, I think this is probably step one of mental health. And it's probably maybe even like, you know, 65% of it. Acknowledging what the elephant in the room is or acknowledging the problem is 50% or more of finding positive resolution and positive outcomes. So just by acknowledging why, for example, you're feeling a certain way or what makes you decide to go into therapy, right? What makes you decide to go into therapy? You acknowledge that something's going on and you're having a difficult time figuring out different options for resolution. So when we acknowledge the problem, after we acknowledge it, then we have to assess. We have to assess what it is that we want to keep in our lives. We're assessing our behaviors, our actions, our thoughts, our perceptions, and we assess where is this coming from? What are the perceptions? What are the thoughts? What are our actions and behaviors that may or may not be working for us? And then after we assess that, then we make an adjustment. And we have to make some adjustments in terms of saying, okay, you know what? Instead of seeing, for example, my friend every Tuesday and Wednesday from 3 to 4, I'm going to see my friend every Tuesday and Thursday from 3 to 3:30. That's a very benign and simple example. But a lot of people are afraid when they come into therapy, they're afraid that they are going to have to make big changes. And I have to be, I would like to hear from you, actually, about what you think, Stephanie and Gladys, Michaela, about what is therapy for you. Because my perception is therapy is not about making big changes, but my perception is that therapy is about making a shift in how you perceive things, how you behave, how you, your actions. Just sometimes a small shift is enough that brings about significant change that results in feeling really better, both physically, mentally, and socially. So before I get to step 4 and 5, does anyone want to comment on that about what I was just sharing?
Yeah, I would like to comment. To me, when I think of therapy, I feel like I just kind of like get the image that I'm alone in a cave, so to speak. And when you, so all I know is that cave, and I have my routine in the cave, you know, I make my fire or whatever it is. When you're going into therapy, you realize there are other things beyond the cave that you had no idea about. And therapy really makes, gives you that awareness to see things differently. So not everything's black and white. There may be some blue, there may be some red or pink. So it is a shift in your perspective of things, because therapists, they could see things in a different way, or they could see things that you may not have even noticed about yourself, or things that are bothering you, or things that are affecting you.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So,
Stephanie, you know what? I don't want to put you on the spot, but I do want to ask, could you give us a simple example for some people who may not be so mentally health savvy? Something simple that's not too personal for you.
Well, I guess I'll try to be a little general without too much information. But so when I first went into therapy, I didn't really know what to expect. I thought it was just going to be me sitting, you know, on a couch talking, and there wasn't going to be much conversation. So, and actually that was my first therapist, and then the second, and had asked more questions, and then the third therapist I had really was the one that helped me to shift. And I had like a lot of issues with family, and you know, they really took my power away in a lot of the sense, certain family members. And I really didn't realize how much it was affecting me until this person that, you know, was outside really kind of, made me aware to that, and it like totally changed everything, for me at least. Just like seeing that different perspective and seeing that shift, because you really don't want to come to terms with those things, you know, especially when it comes to family, because, you know, your family, you accept them, you love them, and you really don't want to think anything bad or negative. But, you know, then you have to kind of look past that and think about yourself separately and, you know. You have to take care of yourself too. So, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I often make a statement to my patients that you love your family. Most people, I would say, generally really love their family, but you don't have to like everything about them. And it's those parts, right? It's those parts that you don't like about your family. Those are the parts that if you can figure out how to manage a difficult relationship, that's how therapy can really help. I don't know if Gladys or Michaela would like to chime in here, but please feel free if you want to.
I mean, I personally agree. I also have a lot of family issues, and I feel like going to therapy, like growing up, certain things like had occurred that now that I'm older, I never really thought like, wow, like that's messed up, or like, oh, this could be classified as like emotional abuse or like certain things like that until I really went to therapy. And walking into therapy, I definitely didn't expect to enjoy it, I guess, as much as I did. I definitely started at such like a young age, and I just thought like, wow, like I'm so young, and it's the fact that like the rest of the kids around me, like they're not doing this, and it's like I'm doing this. So like I personally felt something was wrong with me, or that my family constantly gave me comments about the fact that, you know, you're old enough now, like the fact that you can't even handle your own stress and you always have to go to someone, like can't be like that. And I completely understand about like toxic family. I just feel that like, yes, like it's your family and you love them, and of course you want them to love you, and sometimes it doesn't work like that, and not everyone's I don't know, like able to receive that type of love that they wish they had, and it definitely messes you up mentally. I know having a bad relationship with my parents definitely has had a great impact on my mentality and how I've been doing in my depression. But I feel in general that if someone doesn't want the best for you, whether you are like family, a friend, or whatever, if you're like a toxic person in a sense, like you're just toxic. Like it doesn't matter if you're family or not. If you're not going to support me, then I shouldn't have to put up with that, because now that's just negative energy entering my life. And then I feel if you always just surround yourself with negative energy, it's kind of all you're going to think or like have, because how are you supposed to get any positivity in life, if everyone's always bringing you down or like always has a comment and then you're always paying attention to what everyone else says or thinks, then it's, how are you supposed to live your life like that?
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And yet the challenge is that if the negative comments are coming from family, the truth is that most people do not want to estrange themselves from their family, yet they, at the same time, they want to find a different way to manage the relationships that they do have with their family. You know, I often
100%.
Say, right? And I know, Michaela, you've, heard, you've heard me say this, that if our family, you know, treated their coworkers when they go to work the way they treat their own children or their spouses, if they, on in the workplace, they would be fired, right? How often have I said that? So often, right?
Oh, agreed, 100%.
Right? So I don't know why, and it's very interesting, and anyone who's listening to this program, it's a good just food for thought about monitoring and having a mirror of our own, let's say, our own mannerisms and our words and our tone of voice and our actions towards others, and making sure that they're not hurtful and or harmful. And I'm not saying that somebody who you are in a relationship with in your family is not, that they are in the right. But what I'm saying is that there may be a different way of handling a difficult situation where the family member is not in the right, yet at the same time, there you as a family member have a very deep and personal and vested interest in preserving at least some type of relationship within the family unit. Hmm?
Yeah, definitely. And to add, I'd like to add on to that a bit, like, it's kind of as if, you know, it's like one thing if, like, friends disrespect you, or if you're not getting, like, such great energy from them compared to a family member, because, you know, like, friends fight and they'll say things that they may not mean or they mean, and it's like, that's one thing. But now, when it comes to family, it's a whole, like, respect thing. So, something you would say to your friends or whatever, you can't necessarily say to your family members. And I think a lot of parents don't understand that over the years, like, a lot of kids start to become more aware of, like, certain things that they put up with that they should have never put up with growing up. And that kind of builds, like, a sense of tension that kids have with their parents, and that makes teenagers or whoever, like, a lot more devious, or whether even if you're an adult, it's like certain things that you put your children through and you don't realize how badly that messes you, like, them up, that is only going to draw them further from you. And then by the time you realize that, like, something's wrong, or when you find out, like, yes, my child is depressed, and you start to think, like, what could I've done better? Like, by that time, I feel like it's a little too late, because now your child just has, I don't know, just tension towards you and kind of like a grudge because you added on to that. So now it's kind of hard to rekindle that or rebuild that relationship and make something so positive when all your child has received is, or like any family member, like, just so negative. Like, it's kind of hard to get into that positive mentality while remaining, like, respectful, because you don't want to disrespect your mom or your dad or an aunt, uncle. Like, doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah, let me just, Gladys, I know you want to chime in here, and I know you have something to add to this, but I would just like to provide a little education to the listeners, is Michaela and Stephanie, actually. What we're really discussing here is what we call the intergenerational transmission of trauma. So what does that mean? And let me give an example, which I always think makes everything a little bit easier. And eventually, I should just say that to the listeners, that eventually we're going to go Facebook Live with this show, and I will have a whiteboard, because I really love using visuals. So if anyone, you know, is hearing something, write it down. until actually we go live, and then with the whiteboard, with the visual, and then listening, the message usually is much more profound, and it gets transmitted and introjected in a different way. So hopefully you can hear this. This intergenerational transmission of trauma is basically not knowing what you're passing on to your children. So a parent, a mom gives birth, and then she basically does what she learned and what she knew, and that's what she passes on to her child. And then, you know, P.S., the mom is maybe, let's say, drinking too much alcohol, okay, and then the kid is sort of depressed and quiet in school, and then counseling gets involved, and then all of a sudden we realize that there is a mental health issue within the family unit. Now, I'll give an example, and then Gladys, I'll let you chime in. Yes, just yesterday I was doing an exam, an assessment with a vet. And the vet basically said to me, he has a diagnosis of alcohol abuse. It's unspecified, but it's chronic and persistent, and he basically drinks every day. And the alcohol is a very poor coping mechanism. Number one, I think we know that. But number two, it's impairing his judgment and his insight. So talking to this guy a little bit, you know, it's very easy to say, to make a judgment just from listening to that little piece I just gave you. But withholding any judgment, instead, keep an open mind and be curious and use a little inquiry. So I'm asking him some questions. Well, P.S., this guy, his mom died when he was a teenager. But prior to that, she was estranged from him because she wanted nothing to do with her children. And this vet was put into a foster home, and then his biological dad had to go through the courts, and he had to get his child back, which was this vet, who happened to have and has a twin brother. Can you imagine that? These twin boys, little kids, their mom doesn't want them, and then the dad has to go to court to get his own children back. Okay, I don't understand really what was the underlying factors there, but that's just the facts that he gave me. Well, here we go. Fast forward. He graduates from high school, and the vet is feeling a little lost. He joins the Marines, and he served our country faithfully and with courage for 10 years. I mean, he's one of the reasons why we are so safe in our nation today. And he gets out. And if anybody knows this, but anyone who is who knows anything about veterans, is that reintegration back into civilian life is very difficult, very, very difficult and very challenging. So understandably, a coping mechanism such as drinking is often something that somebody like a vet will go to. Not always. I'm just saying that it's one of the coping strategies. So this guy is drinking and drinking, and he really can't get his life together now, and he's struggling. But I find out that he has two other children. So I ask him, well, how's your relationship with your children? He said, well, I'm having a problem with the baby's moms, so I really don't see the kids. So my response to him was to try to share with him just what I was seeing, is that your mom indirectly rejected you, and how did that make you feel? So think about that. And now think, no matter what's happening with your child's mom, how do you think your child feels when you're not interacting with him? Because he is you and you are him. And he thanked me at the end of the assessment, and he said he had never thought of things this way. And I gave him some really great resources and some information, and I think he was going to hopefully pursue that. But I think what we're talking about here is the intergenerational transmission of trauma. And by having discussions and a show such as this, even if we have only one listener or two listeners, if it makes a difference for one person, then all of us, by participating in this show, we're like paying it forward, because now we are providing and giving back what we have learned to promote wellness in our culture, because we are a global society, right? And I don't want to get too philosophical, but I really feel very strongly about that. Gladys, go ahead. What did you want to say?
Well,
I will add that when you were asking about what it was, what you were expecting before starting therapy, mm-hmm. in my case, I was looking for answers. I have a lot of questions. I started questioning why I feel the way I feel, why certain things made me angry, why certain things, or why I was always so happy being alone. So I pretty much was looking for answers. And the other part was, I knew that I needed to talk to somebody and work and get out from inside things that they were bothering me, and like pretty much digging out. And the last thing, and it's perfect with Kayla, I think is her name, was talking about parents.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all go, unfortunately, go through that, but I was looking for a way to find a way to forgive things that hurt me, from people that hurt me in the past, mm-hmm. and that it was up to me to learn to let those things go, mm-hmm. because the more I allowed them to hurt me, I was hurting myself. They were probably not done on purpose, and I kind of understand to that far, but I was having trouble pretty much letting it go,
mm-hmm.
like, and free myself from that hurt, because I was allowing that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, I learned the therapy is not a quick fix. And there is no magic pill. There is something that I have to work on it every day.
That's correct.
If I want to get myself better.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's true what you're saying. You never forget, but you know, can you forgive? And that's a really, you know, that's a very difficult obstacle to overcome. Hmm? Because mm-hmm. we have memory of people and things that have hurt us, and you never forget. But how do you forgive? It's a very big question. Have you been able to find something that works for you or that helps you?
Yes. Actually, when it comes about my parents and adults,
mm-hmm.
Other adults, is probably that's as far that they know. That's how they know. And especially with my parents and with adults that they want to reprimand you, or they think that they can tell you something because they're older than you in age, they know better. Removing that from my mind, that they only know so much, and what they might think is best, it's not the best for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just pick and choose what I can benefit from the teachings from that person. And mm-hmm. if they hurt me, I've been working for a long time and trying to move on. And I'm not going to lie, sometimes when I remember, I cry, and then I move on.
Mm-hmm.
I stop for a minute and then I move on.
Well, let me say that you bring up a lot of valid points, and your strategy is right on the money, as we say. So for anyone who's listening, let me try to put this in, just put a little bit of a clinical spin on this, is the way to forgive is by looking at exactly what you just said, Gladys. You look at where your parents and where your grandparents came from. And you look and see what were their experiences as a child. What did they go through? What did they learn? You know, where did they have their struggles? Hmm? and then look at your grandparents, and even if you can, your great grandparents. And when you look at the snowball effect from the great grandparents to the grandparents to your parents, you understand why you are sitting with the burdens, psychological, emotional burdens, mental health burdens from the generations behind you, is because that was a different time and era. If your parents were born in this year, 2021, this is a different era. This is now where our kids have access to the internet, and they can Google search, and there is a woke mentality, if you will, to say, this is who I am, this is how I feel, this is what I don't like, and if I don't like it, how can I fix it? Whereas in the 1950s, for example, it was all like, what was the image from the outside? The house with the white picket fence with the two kids and the dog, right? And that it was all about what it looked like previous to this generation and these times where we are now. Now we're finally asking the questions. I think mental health is bigger now in terms of being spoken about and being advocated for than ever before. Mental health is finally, we have mental health awareness, and now people are like, well, what do we do with mental health? And I will tell you, as a professional, there is still a significant amount of people that have a stigma against mental health, right? So, and I can give examples, but I don't want to get into it on this show. But I think that my feeling is, and I would just like some thoughts, maybe Stephanie or Michaela can chime in here. If you understand where your parents and grandparents came from, does it help you feel a little bit better in forgiving, so you can move forward then and figure out your own needs and how you can get better?
In a way, yes, it does.
Okay, Stephanie first, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like when I guess I kind of like move outside of the box and I think of their parents and, you know, et cetera, living circumstances, situations that they were in, experiences, then I do feel empathy. And I feel like when you feel that, you kind of like, that's humanity. And that helps you to forgive, but also, not letting yourself go through any more of, like, don't put yourself in a position where it'll happen again. And you have to create boundaries with people in your family. And you have to decide what's okay and what's not okay. And, you know, you can still love them, but it's not okay. Like, this is not okay anymore. So we're not going to cross that boundary and just set yourself up for, to continue, a relationship. And I think when you kind of stick up for yourself and, have empathy toward them at the same time, then forgiveness is a bit easier in a sense.
Forgiveness is easier.
Yeah.
I think that quite frankly, that is really the only strategy I have found that is supportive to my clients that will come in and they're looking to forgive. And I think when we have cognitive understanding, we can cognitively mediate and then redirect our thoughts, because knowing the deficits of where our caretakers come from and what they went through, it puts a little bit of a cushion underneath our own emotional and mental health pain. And it sort of helps us bounce forward a little bit easier. Not that we're you'll never forget, but it eases that tension and that internal pain. And in that respect, cognitive restructuring is very, very helpful. You know, before I get to you, Michaela, I wanted to ask you, Gladys, did you hear when Stephanie was making an analogy of before she went into therapy, how she felt like she was in a cage?
Yes, I hear it. And thank you for mentioning that, because that's the way my mind work as well. It's just that mine is not a cage. Mine is a glass jar.
Yours is, I'm sorry, is a what?
A glass jar.
Mm-hmm.
One of these beautiful glass jars with a nice cover. And it's very difficult to get out of the jar.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I can say something different, but I love that analogy. They really register with mine. It's very similar.
Mm-hmm. How is that similar?
In my case, I think the easiest way for me to explain it is I can see that the lid from this jar has been loose and is almost open, but I having trouble reaching out to the top and actually fly out from inside the jar. And it helped me to see where I find myself. And I don't know if it makes any sense to anybody, but it's pretty much like, I think I'm abusing probably myself, knowing that I can fly and I just don't have the guts to open my wings and actually find that freedom.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's really frustrating.
That's
you can
weird.
Probably hear it in my voice.
Yeah. So there, herein lies your frustrations that you have the wings, you have your autonomy, and yet there's something that's preventing you from spreading your wings and flying.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily away, but just flying and feeling your freedom and having your breath and being able to breathe a little bit easier and a little bit calmer. Yeah.
Yeah. You hit it right in the nail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think this is, you know, a very valid conversation, because if we're feeling this and we have experienced it, then anyone who's listening to the program, this may resonate with them also. And if this resonates with anyone who's listening to the podcast or listening to the program, even if you get one thing out of it, is that you're not alone. And knowing that you're not alone is probably one of the most, I think that provides the greatest relief. When you know that you're not alone and you're not the only one who may be going through something, I think that helps a little bit in knowing that if there's a will, there is definitely a way. Michaela, I'm going to let you just share your thoughts with this, and then we're going to start wrapping up.
Regarding like parents, I definitely think that it does give you a sense of like understanding, knowing like where your parents came from. So I come from like a Portuguese household, whereas not everyone's so affectionate, and my parents never received affection really. My dad grew up in a time where like he was getting beat at school, or like any small thing, he got beat by his parents. And then my mom, it was like, she was never neglected. I mean, she was neglected, and it's the fact that, like, she always had to do everything, and her brother never took responsibilities, and everyone was always hard on her. So, I mean, in a way, yes, it provides you a sense of, like, I guess feeling bad, because it's like, okay, like, I know you went through some hard things. Like, you want to have sympathy, but then I don't really have sympathy when it comes to how parents sometimes say, like, oh, I would never put my kids through what I went through because I would never want to do that to them. I want to do better. But then there are some parents that don't do better and do the same exact thing that they did. So now it's just, it's going through trauma twice. So
yeah.
I feel like yeah. it's definitely a hard thing. And it's, you definitely want to have sympathy. Like, I get upset with my parents, and if I still see my mom cry or whatever, like, it makes me feel bad, and I'll be like, okay, maybe mm-hmm. I could have worded this differently. Maybe I should say sorry. So you have mm-hmm. these feelings, and, like, in your mind, you feel like you're right, and you have entitlement to how you're feeling, and you have a point. But then when you discuss it with them, sometimes they shoot it down, and they'll give you reasons as to why they think they're right. So now you feel like your feelings aren't valid, and it'll just go through like a whole circle. I know I go through that a lot with my parents. So I'll tell them, like, this upsets me. And they'll be like, well, you should have done this, this, and this. And I'm like, okay, there goes my point.
Yeah. Well, you know, let me just wrap that up. This point is that when we realize where we have deficits and where it came from our family, our parents and our caretakers are no longer responsible to fill in that gap, to validate us, and to help us feel better. It takes an act of courage to say that, you know, this is how you feel, and these are your experiences, and you're going to learn how to manage them without having a healing or necessarily an apology. Listen, an apology from your caretaker is the greatest gift a caretaker could give you. But most of the time, you're not going to get it. And if you are going to get it, you're not going to get it on your terms that are going to help you have that healing. So the bottom line is once you are aware, and this is where this really is going back full circle. Here's our mental health 360 as we sort of come to the end of the show. We started the show by saying, what is mental health? Well, mental health really is about acknowledging what did happen and what didn't happen, acknowledging what your problems are, right? And acknowledging what's bothering you. And it's not about going to anyone else to help them solve it or to give you solace or an apology. It's about assessing what is going on, and then making adjustments within yourself that will enable you to feel better and will enable you to have an inner calm. Excuse me. And then these are the five A's. I'll go back over it. And after you make these adjustments, then you have to adapt to this shift, which is what we spoke about in the middle of the program. It's not a change. It's not like you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater, but you're making a shift. Okay. You might be making the bathwater maybe a little bit warmer or a little bit cooler, depending on what you need. Making the shift. So you're not throwing your parents out the window and saying, I'm estranging myself from you, but you're making a shift in terms of how you are managing the relationship with them. And then the fifth step is take action. So Mental Health 360 is a five-step plan. And you'll see this in the book, resetyoursoul.nyc is the website. And you'll see it on my other website, keepinglifereal.com. And you'll see it actually, as we speak about this, on the whiteboard when we get live. The five-step plan, the five A's, is acknowledgement, assessment, adjustment, adaptation, and action. It's a five-step plan for your mental health and your optimal feelings of wellness. It's for your empowerment and for your success. Acknowledgement, acknowledge what happened, what's going on, assess what has to change and what doesn't, make adjustments to where you can and what you want to, adapt to these new adjustments, and then take action from that place. And there is the shift in mental health. And when you have that, not only do you perceive things and think about things differently, but you feel differently also. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Yeah. Does anyone have any final thoughts? We have like 45 seconds. Anybody want to just say anything before we close up here?
Well, to me,
it was just really nice to then
No, go ahead, Stephanie. I'll let you go. We have a little time. Go ahead, Steph.
No, it was just really nice to vent and talk, I guess. So yeah. I just appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate everybody sharing, and I appreciate the fact that we were able to pull together clinical psychological concepts into real life by your participation, and I'm very thankful for that. Gladys, did you want to say something?
No, I just, yes, I would say that thank you, first of all, for the opportunity, and thank you to the other two, to the ladies for sharing. As you said before, just to hear that I knew that I wasn't alone, but actually hear it from others is very helpful. And as you said, well, if somebody else is listening, so we also can help somebody else by helping ourselves. And that's all, but thank you.
Thank you, Gladys and Michaela, Stephanie. I really do want to thank you so much for participating. I want to thank the listeners for chiming in. I want to thank the listeners who have donated $1 or $2 here and there. All funds will go only for more shows, not for any profits. The more money we collect, the more donations we receive, the more shows we will do to take your calls and answers. Thanks so much for listening. This is Mental Health 360. Dr. Susan Lindner signing off. Until next time.